keep a fish is even better. But to be able to catch even more fish is what you need for the ultimate. Hello, I'm David Cummings, and this is Business Video Marketing Strategies and Wealthy Change Talk. Expand your business exposure with video and other hot social methods. Business can be tricky, and we need to stay ahead of the game in order to succeed. And learning to have that edge, that winning drive to satisfy our customers and attract others is certainly the key. At Business Video Marketing Strategies, we believe there are so many ways to do better business, but ultimately, we have to keep our customers and prospects happy. And that leads into our special guest for today. He is the author of Attract, Sell and Keep, The Art of Marketing Your Services with the Ask Workbook. He is a certified financial planner, set up multiple companies, and then retired in 2007 to write, teach, and mentor entrepreneurs just like you. Welcome, Henry Feldman.
Good to talk to you, David.
It's great to have on the line. It really is. Now, can I ask, how did you first get into this industry? It sounds very interesting.
Well, almost by accident. I had a background, a business undergraduate background and some graduate business school work. And I was told by a professor at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania that I should get out of the pre-law major that I had and reconsider, because I was writing A-plus papers in marketing, which almost was by accident, but I found it to be very understandable and a lot easier to think about than microeconomics. And so I went to market research, advertising, and I went into franchise, and I was one of the original people that started, I didn't start it, but I was about the eighth employee, Budger Rent-A-Car Corporation. I don't know if you have that in Australia.
But, not sure.
I was eighth employee, and we opened up 400 licensees in 4 years, and I was traveling all over the United States, and I wanted to eventually get married, to have children, and I decided to go into the brokerage business, which had been a hobby. Investing had been a hobby of mine since I was 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And the first stock I bought was U.S. Steel at 27 and sold it at 92, and I said, wow, this is a great way to make a living. So I joined Merrill Lynch. I don't know if these names are familiar to your audience, but Merrill Lynch was a leading brokerage firm in the late 60s, and they had one of the best training schools, so I went there and started my career in 1969 as a retail stockbroker with no sales, no marketing experience, and a fanciful belief that if I told people what stocks to buy and they went up, they would tell other friends and I'd build my business. That was the totality of my business plan. So, do you want me to keep going on this?
Absolutely. This is good stuff.
And with 3 months of planning, of training in New York, I came back to Merrill Lynch and was handed a pile of coupons that had been sent in by potential customers who wanted a brochure free from Merrill Lynch. And I was told, smile and dial. And in those days, it was easier. You didn't have voicemail and all these other defenses that people now have. But I started smiling and dialing and being basically shy, believe it or not. I realized I had just recently gotten married. I was scared to death, and I thought this was the most undignified way to get new business, but I persevered out of fear of failure. And in the process, I learned what I needed to do to start bringing in new business. Now I'll fast forward that. 4+ years later, I was a leading broker nationwide. When I went over to Smith Barney, another American-based company, I became number one in the United States in new business, and I said, oh, my God, I got a talent I didn't even know about, and I kept studying it, and the more I studied, the more I realized that it was an art that could be learned rather than some kind of inborn talent, which I'm sure I didn't have,
mm-hmm.
And the more I studied, the more I realized that I can make a lot more money working for myself. And in 1977, I left a very good job at Smith Barney, which was a fine firm. I started my own firm, 400 square feet, a retired secretary, and a lot of phones, and I went after it. And I had started to call in small community bank trust departments in the States. And by the end of 87, I had about 193 banks in 38 states and building a substantially a fast-growing business. And the more I did it, and more I was in the trenches, the more I realized that this was the most important part of business.
Yeah.
And are you familiar with Peter Drucker, the man that wrote the management book, the preeminent management book in the States?
Personally, I don't know.
Excellent book. And he said that the job of a entrepreneur in with your audience is threefold. Mm-hmm. Number one, you have to have administration. Number two, you have to have implementation. And the third thing, you got to have market and sales.
Mm-hmm.
And the first two, administration and implementation, are costs. The only thing that makes business and grows a business is the ability to market and sell your services.
Yes.
And so I said, Lord, you know, if I have a choice between the three of these, I didn't think I was a particularly good administrator, and I was sort of probably an average manager. But what I found my best utilization of my time was to go out and build my two businesses, which became substantial businesses. And by the day I retired in 07, I had sold both, and I went into retirement being a proud 1%er in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a fast review of my business. But on retiring, being a bit neurotic and productive most of my life, I wanted to get these University of Hard Knocks experience down on paper, because I had read well over 100 books about marketing and selling services, and none of them satisfied me. Most of them were written by consultants that really didn't have, you know, feet on the ground going after new business, and I figured there was a need for a basic manual.
Yeah.
And a workbook that would teach people who had to sell, maybe didn't want to sell, but had to sell, how to go out and build their business.
Mm. Well, that certainly wraps up a big chunk of experience there. And a lot of people, I can say, as you mentioned, don't particularly like to sell, but I think they've got to realize that everyone is selling something every day, even if it's just selling a smile to someone walking by. And we need to learn how to do that better sometimes.
Correct.
Well, that is quite a resume. It really is. So that's how you got into the industry. But then you said that you wrote this book around 2011, which is Attract, Sell, Keep. What was the actual drive to get in it and start writing it?
Good question. When you reach that marvelous age of 70 years old, or actually, in my case, 67 years old, I realized I had a gift to give to my friends, to my former employees, to anybody who would listen to me. And I didn't mention, but I had taught various aspects of this book on and off for 30 years, trying to teach CPAs and lawyers and consultants, and I taught at the university and so forth, that no one really was teaching these basic lessons. And I wrote the book simply to give to anybody who was willing to read it and kind of practice the skills that I talk about, that just about anybody could go out and really attract, sell, and keep new business. And it didn't require a silver-tongued devil, because I sound that way maybe a little bit now, but when I started out, I was awkward and frightened and very tentative about what I did. But like anything else, if you keep doing it, you get good at it.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to share this information with others.
Oh, I'm sure it's really paid off, or certainly has. You've published the whole book and moved forward in that respect. So with that, the actual Attract, Sell, Keep book, if I'm an average Joe on the street and I want to get in and start my business, then how would this book want to change my life? How would it point me in the right direction starting out?
Well, first of all, there has to be recognition of the importance, if you're ambitious, of the importance of learning the skill. And then you have to recognize that the reason you've never learned these skills is there in the United States, there's only 14, as of this is kind of a dated number, 14 schools out of 4,000 that even teach this. Yet in the United States, about 80% of our gross domestic product is in the sale of services, as we've become less and less committed to manufacturing, which is a danger in my judgment. But somebody is selling services to someone. So for these people who, if you went to undergraduate or even graduate school and they were offering a course in marketing and selling services, you wouldn't take that course. And this is what the universities told me. They said they didn't really want to hire me to teach this to their alumni, which is one of the things I wanted to do when I retired, because they felt if they had to pay money and spend time learning how to sell, no one would show up at the class. Because if you become a professional, one of the reasons you do that is so you don't have to market and sell. You can live on your technical knowledge and your, you know, good bedside manner and personality. And my contention is, in a hyper-competitive environment, which we have in the United States, with the internet coming on board and a weak economy, if you sit and wait for your phone to ring, you might be waiting a long time. In fact, I just finished a new blog that you can get on www.theaskbook.com about the fact that where business is weak, people start shutting down their marketing expenses. They shut down their active outreach programs, waiting for the phone to ring. And I said, rather than going passive, go active, because the cost of marketing will be a lot less, and your ability to attract attention in these dull, you know, poor periods can be tremendously magnified.
Yeah. I noticed one of your other blogs there. It's a blog written called Selling Apples.
Yes. It's actually a double entendre, because it really, my son, who's a senior technologist in the States, sent me a copy of the Apple Store training manual, got a hold of. And I read it, and it was pretty basic, but one of the key points in this manual is that you standing on the floor, whether you're on the Geek Squad or whatever they call it, or the Genius Squad, or you're on the floor, your number one job is to make friendship, to build friendships with people who have questions. And something as modest as that is the way most new business is created. And I talk about that in the chapter on relationship marketing.
I think it comes back down to the basics then, isn't it? That you build a good relationship with somebody and they're more willing to trust you and do business with you over someone else they don't know.
Well, I read your some of the information you had on your website, and the concept of relationships I don't think will ever change. And that does not mean that you cannot improve your chances of being contacted or increase the efficiency of people finding you using e-commerce, but it will never replace, in my judgment, the sale of higher priced, more sophisticated services, because it's a sterile medium. And people buy from other people they like, they trust, and they think are competent.
Yes.
And you can't get that in a two-dimensional form on an email or a website, I don't think.
Oh, I totally agree. And the other great seller is word of mouth, isn't it? You do business with me and I like you, well, then I'm sure to tell my friends about you.
Everything starts with your friendships, your family, letting them know what you do, and building your friendships as a radius around where you are, one person at a time. No agendas, no frontal assaults to grab their wallets. I'm a very big believer, and people said, how did you build these two very large businesses? At one time, we had about $3.2 billion in assets under advisement or management with my little company, and I said, well, I just met one person at a time. It's like putting bricks in a wall. And you make friendships, and some of the people are not interested in being your friend. And I don't really call many of my people that I've met over the years friends, but they're people who know what I do. They know me. They like me. I like to think they like me over a period of time. Some people, it's harder. But and then they you learn what they do. You try to help them. They try to help you. And this, to me, is the basic sell of any new business, the ability to create relationships.
I would totally agree in that respect. So I suppose that begs the question then, well, why haven't more professional service providers taken up this this whole concept in learning to promote their services this way?
Well, in the past, and I speak only of America, we had such a rich economy here that all you had to do was have a license, technical knowledge, and good bedside manner, and you could build a business just by one client at a time, and they would create referrals, and everything was hunky-dory. Everything was easy.
Yeah.
Fast forward to the time we have now when we have, you know, less marketing in the United States, less manufacturing in the United States, and people are all crowding into the MBA programs, you know, the business programs. They're crowding into the lawyer, legal programs. They're crowding into the service industry. So if you live in an area that is fairly populated, you don't have the market to yourself. And it's not a gentleman or a gentlewoman's game anymore. People will try to steal your clients. You don't have the ability to gain attraction because you can't afford the type of marketing like Coca-Cola or, you know, Walmart does to attract attention. You are really, you are, especially when you're young, you don't have the kind of resources that you need to really, promote your services.
Yeah.
So you have to start. My book covers the basic starting of hello. When you see somebody that you see on a regular basis and they look like a nice person, say hello. Good morning. How are you? And I have met fancy people, wealthy people, people that have become referral sources, people who have become friends, just by the simple act of saying hello. And the downside of saying hello is very little. Do you buy what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And once you start realizing that people are basically okay, now some people may be busy and they'll walk away and not see you or care about the fact you said hello to them. Other people may, you know, be a little bit more interested. But every person's different. And on a given day, I could meet 3 to 5 new people. All right? And one of them, almost inevitably, would become an ally in my success.
Yes.
Now, I can't prove that.
Yeah.
But you don't become number one in the United States in new business for a big firm like Smith Barney with a lot. I don't have a lot of connections. I'm not fancy in any way. Just by being a human being.
Yes.
I think you agree with that.
Oh, absolutely. A decent human being there to hold a smile when needed and point someone in the right direction. They're bound to turn around and say thank you. That's definitely right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So if someone does say hello and you know, they're warmed up a little bit, then what are some of the psychological examples that we need to overcome to help free ourselves from this comfort zone we're always stuck in to go to the next step?
That's, to me, the biggest obstacle to people's success is the fact that they're frozen in their comfort zone. In other words, they reach a certain point of success or comfort or whatever, and they don't have to put themselves out for the possibility of being rejected or the possibility of shame or the possibility of failure. They don't take chances.
Yes.
And there's 3 reasons why people are kind of frozen. One is the basic fear of failure. No one likes to be rejected.
Yes, that's right.
I think, would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
But if you don't put yourself out there, you can't get rejected.
Yeah.
So I've said hello to people, and they walk right past me. They walk through me. All I did was say hello. You with me? It was not, I'm not smart. I'm not being funny. I just say good morning or how you doing today. And those people have come up to me later on, and they said, you broke the ice.
Wow.
So I sort of wanted to meet you too, but I was afraid to say hello to you.
Yep.
It's remarkable how many people have told me that. They say, you are the friendliest person. I said, well, good. I like that. I like people to think of me that way.
Yes.
So fear of failure is a major, major reason. And I say that fear of failure is a very, very fragile membrane that you can puncture with your baby finger. All you have to do is try and realize the downside is nominal. And the more positive reinforcement you get by just saying hello, the more eager you're going to be able to do it.
Yes.
So that's one of the ways of getting out of your comfort zone and trying things that are a little bit risky. But what can they say? How many times have I had my phone, you know, slammed down on me? I don't internalize it. I said, that's the price you pay for calling people.
Yeah,
they don't
right.
know you.
Yeah.
The second thing is there's a lot of bias. I don't know about your country, but we have movies and plays. Shakespeare wrote The Merchant of Venice. They have been portraying sellers as liars, con artists, horrible people.
Mm-hmm.
But now that you've got an advanced degree or you're a smart guy, do you really want to be profiled in that way? And so people say, well, I'm not a salesman. I'm a doctor. I'm a lawyer. Well, guess what? You ain't going to be a good lawyer or doctor unless you learn how to say hello to people.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And the third thing, which I think is an alibi, and I have a blog on alibis. And, mm-hmm. and people say, well, I'm not supposed to go reach out and meet people. People are supposed to find me. I'm not going to, you know, bow my head and as a supplicant and try to persuade someone to contact me. Well, hey, you can do that, and you'll remain poor and have a substandard quality of life.
Yes.
And I heard a statistic recently, and again, I don't know if you saw it, but that some research group said that 40% of the population are introverts. Did you see that at all?
No, I haven't, no.
So, and my feeling is, in knowing lots and lots of people and teaching lots and lots of schools and so forth, that there are some people that have real false notions about what they're supposed to do and what works and what doesn't work. And they say, well, if I just work hard enough or long enough and keep at it and be nice and trustworthy to people, that they'll build a path to my door.
Mm.
And I'm saying to you, my community in Chicago, which is a large city in America, as you know, you can't just rely on those precious moments where people sort of get to know you by accident. You actually have to reach out and dispel those false notions.
Oh, I agree.
Those are three ways to escape your comfort zone.
Yeah, absolutely. I do this experiment sometimes where you walk through a building and you get into a lift, and other people get into the lift, and it's usually silence. And I tell you what, if you want to make a little bit of a remark or what a beautiful day it is, you'd be surprised at how many people actually turn around and smile and say hello back. It's quite amazing that a little word like that in amongst quiet people will all of a sudden turn the whole room from tense and stressful into really a relaxed and happy atmosphere, even if it's for just a few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I suppose it's about charisma then, isn't it?
I think charisma, when it comes to selling, is a grossly overused word. It's not charisma, it's human interaction.
Yeah, that's probably better.
Being a human being.
Yes.
And with no agenda, you're not trying to sell anything. You're just trying to say, hey, I'm one of the people on the earth, and you look like an interesting chap, and I want to say hello to you. And I was on the plane coming back from a wedding Friday.
Yes.
And I'm sitting next to a guy. And I asked him the question. I said, what brought you down to, are you going to or coming from North Carolina? And he said, well, I was fly fishing. And I am a fly fisherman. I've been fishing for 50 years. That's why the third chapter of my book is on marketing and fishing, where the parallels are unbelievable.
Yes.
And it's really fun to read, too. That a professor from Northwestern, who maybe somebody in your audience knows about, Phil Kotler,
right,
who's one of the preeminent marketing professors in the world, he thought that was fascinating, that the parallels between when you fish, which means you've got to attract fish, you know, you can't go under the water and grab them by the tails, and how to sell them, how to persuade them to come into the boat, and how to keep them if you're so inclined. The parallels are phenomenal. And that's one of my hallmark chapters that I think are worth reading.
Oh, that sounds pretty interesting. Just a reminder to our listeners, we're at Business Video Marketing Strategies talking with Henry Feldman, the author of Attract, Sell and Keep, The Art of Marketing Your Services. And it is a really interesting read. He's got some great tips there. And we've got lots of information just pouring out here. One of the other questions I've got, Henry, is obviously you've got an extensive background and experience. But what makes you an expert in teaching this subject?
Well, I've never had been asked that question quite that way. When I was 16 or 17 years old, my mom and dad asked me, what do I want to be when I grow up?
Mm.
And I said, I'd like to become a teacher. And that was not an approved job description because it didn't involve making money.
Right.
My family was all about, you know, building wealth and living good, secure life.
Yeah.
So all my life I wanted to teach, and I found excuses. I taught three schools for bank trust officers. I taught National Trust School. I went around the country teaching service people, primarily those that use my services, how to market and sell their services. So I think it evolved out of those early experiences. And now as a retiree, I wrote these two books, one a manual and the other a workbook, so I could go teach it. And it's been my desire my whole life to be a teacher. And in fact, what most people don't realize is the subject of teaching is the more respected term used for people who are good salespeople.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I would, actually.
My joy is sharing my knowledge. My joy is trying to help people solve a problem or satisfy a need.
Mm.
And if I know something that will help them, I think it's a noble job. I think it has a noble purpose to say, hey, you might want to try this, or this might be a good idea to help you solve this problem.
Mm. I would really agree with that, actually, especially on the lines of, if you've got some secret which could really help someone else out, then it's your obligation or your responsibility to offer that to someone so that they can have a better way as well. That's really interesting that you said that you wanted to do it as a child. I suppose your inner feelings as a child that you wanted to help other people, and it's really carried through by the looks of it right through your whole life, and especially with this book.
I'd like to think there's a very nice flow. That doesn't mean to say that I wasn't maniacal about building my businesses and sometimes was so preoccupied with myself that I wasn't the best husband or best father.
Mm.
And I think that's the downside of you know, building something substantial.
Mm.
But I really have no regrets. And I think that what I did, when I look back at my life and my business life, I say, you know, I had a really good time. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I helped tons of people make more money, protect their money, plan for the transfer of their money.
Mm.
And I really felt that I brought something to the public, those who were willing to listen to me, that had value. And I think if your audience that are in the business of selling services or products,
yeah,
believe that what they're selling is really a noble cause,
yeah,
they're going to enjoy their job a lot more and do better at it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely. And it looks like that this book is really meant to help dig down and find their inner feelings and allow them to actually express it through their business as well.
Right.
Yeah. Now you've got some other points here that I just want to quickly go through if I can. Do you have any golden rules for achieving a richer life? You mentioned something about freeing yourself from your inner fears, etc. Can you go on a little bit further about that?
Commented on that already to the tune that these are the obstacles you must eradicate in order to have persist in your promotional efforts.
Mm.
If you are fearful and you have biases against doing this and you have false notions about it, you're going to sit comfortably in your comfort zone and really not grow or achieve the kind of goals you want to achieve.
And what about reclaiming the emotional energy that you spend on feelings for being powerless? I suppose it's a matter of realizing there is something better at the end of it.
Absolutely. I mean, I am one of the most goal-striving people. I found that I would flap around and do a lot of dumb and wasteful things if I didn't have a goal in mind. And all during my life, I wrote business plans, you know, kind of short to the point, and say, what do you want? What are you spending all this time doing? Why are you doing all this? Why are you on planes, trains, boats, you know, moving around the country, trying to secure business? What are you doing? It? You're not home. Your health is impaired. You go up and down on planes that can, you know, have bad endings. And I said, well, you know, I want to succeed. I had a certain amount of money I wanted to make being a financial planner. I knew that I needed to reach a certain goal to maintain my standard of living.
Mm.
I knew that my mom, this is maybe a revelation that you don't want to share with your audience, but my folks divorced when I was five.
Mm.
And my mother was panicked about money. She was fearful that she would become indigent. She was fearful that she would not be able to survive with my sister and me, you know, and that etches something into your mind. So the idea of helping people and has been my goal. I mean, and by helping people, if you have that sense that what you're doing is helpful, guess who gets the most benefit? It's you.
Yes, that's right. You've got some other golden rules here. Do you mind if I quickly go through them with you?
Not at all.
Okay, you've got to identify your lifetime goals and lay out a plan to achieve them, which you just mentioned about goal setting and that sort of thing. Be courageous and leave your comfort zone, which we talked about earlier. Be genuinely curious about others, and I suppose that really reflects on just being a decent human being again, isn't it?
I don't know if decency is the right word, if you don't mind. I think being curious is what it says. If you're not interested, if I'm not interested in who you are and what you do and how you, what your struggles are and what your joys are, you're never going to be curious about me.
Mm.
And the best book ever written on selling, and I'm sure you have it in Australia, it's Dale Carnegie's famous book, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yeah, we've got that one here, definitely.
I mean, when people say, if I could read one book, and this is before I wrote mine, of course.
Yeah.
When people said, how can I learn to be a salesman, you know, and enrich my life by having more friends?
Yes.
And I said, read the best book ever written about the subject.
Mm.
And as an aside, when I was 14 years old, and I told you I was shy as a child, my mother bought me that book, and I read that book, and it opened up, you know, it turned on the light in what had been a pretty sad early existence.
Mm.
And I said, oh, my God. If I ask people about themselves out of genuine curiosity, they may ask me about myself, and I can talk to them about what I do and so forth. And I find out that is the seminal connection that begins real relationships. And
yeah.
I'm off point, but I wanted to share that with you.
Oh, well, actually, I think it's very relevant to that point. In fact, the next point you've got here is one of the golden rules. Is listed as listen intently to what others are saying. And I would agree with that 100% because God gave you two ears and one mouth.
Well, we know that. You and I know that. But amateur salespeople, if I can comment on that, amateur salespeople are so fearful of being rejected that they start talking. And they were instructed to do this by famous sales training courses put out by IBM and Xerox, which basically talked about, and this is prior to 1980, that the way to sell was to learn the features and benefits of what you're trying to sell and romance it, talk about it, sell the sizzle, not the steak, concentrate on telling the world how wonderful your product is.
Mm.
And in the world that we live in now, where it's a buyer's market, and I'm sure you have that problem there too, too
yeah.
many competitors chasing too few buyers.
Yeah.
If you try to do that now and grab some by their lapels, let me tell you about this or that, the person's going to turn around and run.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, yeah.
Today you have to be a counterpuncher.
Mm.
Now, I'm not saying this is a manipulation, because if you read my book, you know I'm totally against manipulation and a priori, you know, pigeonholing the person in front of you because they're old and they're 5 feet four, and you're trying to understand who they are and where they came from. You got to ask questions.
Mm.
You know, attract, sell, keep. The first letter of each of those words is the word ask.
Yes.
Which is the common thread that goes through my book.
Mm.
So curiosity is about asking questions.
Yeah.
Do you have any children, if I can ask?
Yes, I've got two kids.
Are they young?
Yeah, 10 and 11 years old.
Do they have any problem asking you questions?
Oh, absolutely not. We tell them that they can ask us anything they want. It's just a matter of the timing, but yeah, absolutely, they can ask anything.
What age do we stop asking questions? and we sort of do everything ourselves?
That's a very good question. Probably when we think we know it all.
Right. We know, as there's a certain age, you know you don't know it all.
Mm.
But people fall into their comfort zone and deny themselves their assertive right to ask questions.
Mm. Which is sad.
A big part of my, which is bad, yeah.
Mm.
We make assumptions about people. We sort of feel, hey, this looks like a payday. I'm going to start talking to them about my product. You're not going to sell them. Not in America, you're not going to sell them unless they're pretty, you know, hungry for what you sell.
Mm.
So mm. I think it's vital that you maintain your curiosity and legitimate curiosity, not to ask general questions, but to sort of follow through. What do? Do you do anything different? Where do you work? And mm. do you enjoy your work? Are you with me?
Oh, absolutely.
The more curious you are, the more they're going to be curious about you and what you do.
Yeah. Someone once told me that it's not necessarily the amount of questions, but it's more asking better questions, which opens people up.
Well, and what constitutes better?
Curiosity.
It's what yeah, that's the right answer. Whatever you're curious. If someone says they're in the construction business, which I met this man on the plane,
mm.
he said, well, I remodel old homes. And I said, did you suffer the downturn in the construction industry? He said, no, our business has never been better.
Mm.
So, and we this started our conversation. I'm going to meet this guy. Now, I don't sell anything other than my books.
Mm.
But I'm going to meet this guy. This guy could become a friend. Plus, he's a fly fisherman. There's not too many of those people I know. So, so you meet a guy in the plane. You start asking questions. He asks questions about you. And you find common interests. And all of a sudden, you start a new relationship.
Oh, yes. That's good. That's good. One of the other golden rules here is make others feel good about themselves and when they're with you, and also appreciate and respect the feelings of others. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
The first part, making people feel good about themselves when they are with you, is the singular major point in Dale Carnegie's book.
Mm.
If I say to you, say something to me, let's say, I just bought a Toyota.
Right.
All right? Now,
yep.
That's a declarative sentence. I just bought it. Now, I can say nothing,
mm-hmm.
and that declarative sentence evaporates in the air.
Yeah.
Or I could say, well, you know, I hear that Acura is better, or I hear, now you feel badly about your purchase, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to do that to repel them. So, but if you honestly believe a Toyota is a good car and the model they bought is good, and you give a specific statement saying, wow, the Toyota Avalon is just a beautiful car and it's almost a Lexus without the price,
mm.
this guy's going to feel really good about himself when he bought the Avalon.
Yes.
I don't know if you know that model. But
yeah, we got that here,
got
too.
You got my point.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we have opportunities. When you're a kid, and I've raised two children, I'm not so sure well, but I just... and I used to be very, very wound up when I came home after, you know, a 10-day hour work and all sorts of issues coming from a fast-growing company. And they wanted to talk to me. You know, I wanted to just lay down or get a drink, you know, get a drink or something. And what I learned from Dale Carnegie was something that your child will feel good about themselves.
Yeah.
It'll make them feel good about themselves.
Mm.
And guess what? My kids sparked up. I would say, did you write anything today in your English class? And my daughter or someone would come to me and say, hey, Dad, you want to take a look at it? I say, absolutely. And if I could honestly say, I really thought that was well done, they blossom.
Yes.
I made up a lot of points that I was losing by not being home a lot in those days. But you're with me on that. So,
oh, yes.
The first part, there's no question about it. You can make friends very quickly in the first 10 minutes of meeting them. If you listen to what they say, and what they say is worthy of comment, positive comment, specific comment, say it and see how fast people get to like you.
Yes.
I forgot the second part of your question. I'm sorry.
It was appreciate and respect the feelings of others.
Right. Empathy is the when you say, I just had an experience with a bad salesperson.
Mm.
It is usually due to the fact that all they want to do is talk about their product and their service.
Yes.
They didn't care who you were. You were just another pair of ears that stopped long enough to hear their pitch. All right?
Yeah.
The issue of listening, and if you get into my book, I really have these principles laid out black and white, no questions asked. I said, if you talk 20% of the time and your prospect or your prospective customer talks 80% of the time, I will almost guarantee you will sell what you're trying to sell 100% of the time.
Mm.
Salesmen talk too much.
Yes.
One of my big problems is I'm hogging the airwaves right now, but I feel these are good questions, and I would like to share my knowledge with your audience.
Oh, it's gold. It's really good.
Pardon?
It's really good stuff here. Keep going.
Well, I was on a station in Chicago, which was supposed to be a 20-minute interview. It lasted an hour and a half, and I said, oh, my God. You know, I hope I didn't talk too much. And they were, their audience was very appreciative. Anyway, listening. I have one thing better than listening. All the sales books say, listen, find out what the problem is. Find out why that person has called you to find out if you can help them.
Mm.
You got to listen. You got to listen not only what the words are, the underlying emotions.
Mm.
Okay? I have one idea that's even better than that. When I'm in a meeting with a prospective customer, I have a piece of paper and a pencil out. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm an old guy and I don't use computers very well and I can't type very well. So I ask a question and I write down the answers.
Yes.
And the sheer act of doing that, which is called very active listening, your prospect will tell you everything that you ever want to know because you're memorializing what they're saying and showing great respect for them by taking notes.
Mm.
And these are just a few of the things I discuss in my book. I could go on and on and on because I love the subject, as you can tell. But these things really work. Without manipulating, perfectly ethical, so forth. So where are we going next?
Well, these golden rules are really gemstones. I really enjoy this. Be Thank disciplined you. On how you spend your time is the next one.
When I was in the office of Merrill Lynch, we had 14 stockbrokers, and each of us started with the same basic background, technical knowledge, and so forth.
Mm.
And I sort of knew this, but I didn't think it was very good. Stockbrokers in America in the 70s and so forth were pretty busy in the morning, and then they had lunch and came back, put their feet up on the desk, and started reading the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know, talking to their friends or calling their wives or their girlfriends.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, I'm not that person. I've got to make a living. These people had to make a living, but they felt that they did a lot of work in the morning so they could sort of, you know, flop around the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Well, I did all my work in the morning. I was very aggressive about getting all my jobs done. I took lunch by sitting in my car and going to meet people. Because I felt that if someone was going to entrust their life savings to me to help them manage the money, they should meet me and see how I looked and what I thought about.
Mm.
You with me?
Oh, yes. Make another point of contact is so much more important.
It is. It is. Would you trust your life savings with somebody who called you over the phone?
No.
Same thing if you're going to sell a consulting service, legal services, anything. The phone is a limited instrument to arrange, has a limited role, and that is to arrange an appointment if you properly pre-qualified the person you're going to go see.
Mm.
I saw something in your literature about e-marketing.
Oh, yes.
And I've been asked this question a lot recently, and if you're interested, it's not part of the my golden rules, but I would like to add something here because I'm really learning. My learning curve, I was pretty low on the learning curve as far as email and Facebook and all those other things. And I had pretty negative attitude towards them because I didn't think like you, I believe, that you get business based upon your ability to make relationships and build relationships.
Yeah.
And the more I've studied, and my son is a senior technologist and he was really up on this, I said to my son, electronic marketing is a distribution tool. It is cannot sell your product. It cannot nurture the relationship. It is basically a funnel where you can get people to get information quickly and don't expect it to do more than it was ever intended to do.
Yes.
I'd be interested in your reaction to that.
Well, mine would be that it might sound like I'm resounding exactly what you said, but with email marketing, Facebook, and the other social marketing tools, all they are is a point of contact as a delivery, and you cannot sell anything unless it's the last apple in the whole fruit shop, or you have to build a relationship to say, you have got a great fruit shop, come in and see what we've got to offer, because I am establishing myself as someone who is approachable, and I want to build a relationship with you. I don't want to feed you junk. I want to give you the good stuff. And basically resounding what you said, these tools are a delivery mechanism, and that's all. And if people rely on them simply as the answer to everything, well, then they're going to be sadly mistaken when things go pear-shaped.
When things go
pear-shaped, it starts off nice and rounded at the first bit.
Okay.
Yes. You know, you put a pear on the bench, it's all...
I never heard that expression before.
Well, you put a pear on the bench and it's all lumpy at the bottom and nice and skinny at the top. So if you start with an apple, nice and rounded, you'll end up with a pear if you don't look after things.
I like that. My day is complete. I just learned a new expression. I like that.
Yeah.
So that's the basic story. The book is... one of the things I was hoping you would ask me, what makes your book unique?
Mm.
And it took me 11 years to write it. And as I said to you, I'm not a good writer. I became a better writer.
Mm.
I used to write economic stuff all the time. But I want to write a book that would give me the opportunity to play Merlin,
right,
young King Arthur,
mm,
that would allow King Arthur to do his own thing. He had to bring the ambition. I'm not a motivational speaker. I've been asked many, many times, will you do a motivational speech? And I said, no, because motivation must come from within, and you can get people inspired for a moment, but it's not going to change their behaviors.
Mm.
This is what I believe.
Yeah. The fact that it took you 11 years to write the book, it's obviously got some real gemstones in there based on real life experience, and based on the fact that you've seen others go down the wrong path when perhaps you could have helped them in the beginning. And that's what this book is probably more aimed towards, I imagine.
Absolutely. The discovery I made is that what I taught in my book is applicable to anybody who has to sell their services. I've seen plumbers. I've helped plumbers. I've helped salon, you know, women's hair places, what do you call them, salons?
Yes, salon, yes.
I've helped people build their business. I helped build a lady who is in the personnel business, build her business monumentally.
Mm.
So the principles, and this again is a little bragging here, and I'm allowed to do that every once in a while. The principles that I suggest are applicable as a basic manual for anyone who is struggling to increase their standard of living.
Mm-hmm.
By doing better, by bringing in more business. And it has the secondary benefit that if you're out meeting more people, your universe of potential friends grows exponentially.
Yep.
With me?
Yes, absolutely.
They may not be your customers, but you found people that you can play with, you can travel with, you can talk with.
Mm.
And many of my friends didn't do business with me.
Mm.
And I never would have found them had I not been in business trying to meet them.
Yes. Well, that's fantastic. These are real gemstones that I'm sure our listeners will certainly be able to apply in their life, whether they're a small business like a plumber or whether they're a leader of a multinational firm. If they just apply these things in their everyday business and indeed their everyday life, then things will really... really turn around from. I really appreciate you joining us today, Henry. It's really, really good.
Well, you honor me, and I'm tickled that you contacted me and found me. I hope I gave you your money's worth, and I hope that you prosper and your audience prospers from this advice, which is based upon my experiences in America.
Mm.
And I'm not sure everything I said is valid or useful, but I hope they'll give my book a chance. Take a look at it. It's on from Amazon Kindle. You can download it for less than $10 US.
Yep.
And I thank you for the opportunity.
That's okay. If people do want to get your book and they can't find it easily, then just go to www.theaskbook.com, and there's a tab there which says buy the book, and it'll take you a direct link right into where it's for sale. So that's probably the other easy way to get it as well. And if you've got any questions for Henry that you really want to ask him and you're not sure that we've answered it on this call, then get onto him via his website as well. There's an Ask Henry part there as well. So get in there and write a question to him, and I'm sure he'll be delighted to answer those questions for you. Thank you so much once again. I really appreciate it, and no doubt our audiences as well.
To meet you. You're a charming interviewer. I've had a lot of interviews, and I've felt relaxed. It may not sound that way, but I felt relaxed from the moment I said hello to you just today. So thanks very much.
Oh, it's been a delight on our behalf as well. Thank you so much. On behalf of Business Video Marketing Strategies, I'm David Cummings. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye for now.